The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1. Text now to 51551 or email mooney at rte.ie.
I bet people are hating that sound, and some of you love it. It's great to be back. First programme in a long time. And what has happened since we've been away, Brenda? Do you know what's happened?
Well, let me see. Ireland are playing another match tomorrow against Moldova. And they barely scraped through.
How is Robbie Brady, by the way?
Well, he's not with the squad this time, but believed to make a full recovery.
I was watching it.
Yeah.
In a
nasty
pub. Clontarf, and people thought he'd swallowed his tongue when they were watching the match. No, but I was talking about other things.
Yes.
Europe, it's never going to be the same again, you know.
Never.
No, not since the UK voted in favour of Brexit. And then we had Brexpit. Do you know what Brexpit is? The split of Hollywood's hottest couple, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, reminding us that there's no such thing as the perfect family, with the exception of yourself.
Of course.
And proving the old adage that you can't make an omelette without cracking a few eggs, the Great British Bake Off is sliced off the BBC's editorial cake in... Bakes it.
That's very good.
I'm not sure about that one. Can you come up with anything better? You can text 51551. Also, we have a great prize for you today in our quiz. It's a two-night break for two people, including breakfast each morning and an evening meal for two in the four-star award-winning Castleknock Hotel and Country Club in Dublin. To be in with a chance to win, text us your name now if you want to take part in the quiz to 51551. But do it now. Anyway, Brenda, it's good to be back.
Yes, dear.
Thank you for coming in. How was How was the thing you were on?
Yeah, it was very good, actually. It lasts for 4 weeks. It's over. So it was like a mini kickstart. Get you ready for Christmas. Get you back on track. So it wasn't the big extended version that they have in January, which is 8 weeks long. So it was 4 weeks. Five C-list celebrities, except for me. I was a D-lister. And
don't put yourself down
I'm
like that. There's plenty
joking.
Of people out there who'll do that for you.
Yeah, that's true too. So yeah, so it was full on, Derek. So it was really kind of changing the way you prepare food, the food that you eat, increasing the kind of exercise you do, or else getting you to do some exercise, getting you to do resistance training, getting a feel good kind of, I suppose, community reaction in your local area. So it was full on, and you had a camera following you 24/7. So
that must have been a pain in the face.
Well, it wasn't.
And actually in the rear, because they show people's bottoms a lot in those programmes, don't they?
There was a lot of bottoms and spare tyres shown.
Did you have a lot of bottoms walking with you around the roads of Kildare?
I did. It was really interesting. Before it even started, when it was announced that I was doing it, a friend of mine said, do you need company on the walk? And I said, that'd be lovely. Yeah, let's arrange a walk. And about 80 people turned up. And if you remember the beginning of September.
I do.
The weather was only beautiful.
Beautiful.
And all the kiddies were out in their scooters and their bikes and everything. And we walked that fat arse boulevard from Johnstown to Kill and back. Very fast.
Was it a bit like Bad Short? Kill Miss Gully.
You know that walk he does with the girls?
Sorry,
yeah.
Let's go for a stroll.
So yeah, so I had loads of people, but it was everybody knew you were doing it.
Of course, it's on telly.
It's on telly.
It reminds me. I shouldn't hark back to the old days, but anyway, years ago I was doing Winning Streak, and this lady won all around her.
Yeah.
Now she was a bit on the elderly side, but during the program she tugged on my jacket and she said, "Don't mention anything about the money I've won. I'm not speaking to the other fella." And I looked at her and said, "You do realise you're on television." And she was obviously living in the house with her husband, but they weren't, you know,
talking,
having relations anymore.
Yes.
And they weren't talking. And for some reason, this woman thought nobody was ever going to know she was on television and had won about €65,000.
I'd say people would have known pretty fast that was going to happen. But I was in Tesco's then in the middle of it, right?
Yes.
And about 10 o'clock at night. And we're about week two or three into the programme. And one of my kids rang and said, "Oh, can you get us a packet of popcorn, please?"
Dear. Oh, dear.
So I'm standing looking at the crisp aisle and I'm trying to figure out where is the popcorn. And a woman comes up to me and she practically assaults me. And she goes, "Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't get the crisps." And I go, "Well, actually, it's not for me. It's for my daughter." But the more you say that, the more they kind of go, "Yeah, whatever. Whatever." But I will never, ever, ever be able to order a takeaway or a muffin again.
But what weight did you start at? And did you lose any weight? And have you kept it off?
Well, I think the first thing I have to say And the biggest achievement so far is I've managed to keep it off.
Well done.
And that's like 3 or 4 weeks later, because I could have had a quick blowout and you'd be up 3 or 4 pounds. So I started out at 13.5 pounds.
No, hang on a second.
Yeah.
What weight were you?
When I started,
yeah.
13 stone, 3 pounds.
And is that heavy for a girl?
That is very, well, I'm only 5'1".
Okay.
Well, I thought I was 5'2", but they told me I was 5'1".
I'm 13 and a half stone.
I know, yeah. Well, there you go. I was just, yeah, but I'm a girl and I'm much smaller than you.
Well, I'm almost wearing Spanx.
Yeah.
Things are getting bad in that department.
Spanx.
Well, I know.
Yeah. Anyway, so over the course of 4 weeks, I lost 1 stone, 1 pound. So that's 15 pounds.
Well, that's very good because you lost it gradually then.
I lost, well, the first 2 weeks, 4 pounds, third week, 4 pounds,
yeah.
And the last week, 3 pounds. Now, the last week was particularly hard because it was full on with work. So you're trying to work, you're trying to do the plan, you have a target of 2 pounds to lose. And particularly with women, you know, their bodies, it kind of plateaus for a while, especially when you've lost so much so quickly. And I could see, and I wasn't coming down, I was like half a pound down. I was going, I ought to be standing up in my knickers in front of everybody and I'm not going to hit the target.
No, you hang on a second.
And Catherine
now.
Thomas
Hold
is
on.
Going to be there in her high heels.
Now, hang on
and
a
she's
second.
Going to look lovely.
You chickened out because I saw one or two of the weigh-ins.
Yeah.
And you weren't standing there in your knickers at all.
Well, no, I was in the Lycra.
Yeah, but you had something
top. On. Yeah.
Why would you not bear it all?
But sure, what's the point?
Because people are nosy and they want to see.
Yeah, I know. I was shown enough. I mean, I showed the kitchen. I showed Harvey. <you know? laughs> I showed the makeup. I showed myself eating. I showed enough
were
of myself.
Were you embarrassed?
Well, I don't think. Would you like to go there in a belly top? Or would, you know, particularly
would
the guys.
Would
were
I stand
in
there in a
show?
Pair of swimming togs?
Yeah.
In this, what do they call them? The budgie smugglers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
I don't think you would.
Why not? Do you not remember I went on that naked flight?
No.
Yeah, over to Finland one time I flew. Everybody on the plane was naked, including the pilot.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, including the pilot.
And you were naked?
Completely naked throughout the whole flight. Yeah,
it.
Yeah, throughout the whole flight. She was in the Star or something.
Yeah,
it was a picture.
I don't
believe
it.
Look, go and do a little Google search. You'll see it.
That. Anyway, yeah. So basically, I gave so much of myself. I wasn't going to do. And I mean, everybody has their own thing and their own limits. I think Elaine Crowley said she wasn't getting in the water. And that was her thing. She wasn't going swimming. So I said, I'm not going to wear it. You know, you had a choice.
But
it
why?
Wasn't like, it wasn't like they said you have to wear
it. No, but
this.
I'm asking you why.
Because I'd be self-conscious. You know, I mean,
you're. Why would you go on the programme in the first place if you're going to be self-conscious? I mean, the whole programme is about that you need to lose a little bit of weight.
Yes.
So.
Well, I went on the programme for a couple of reasons.
They didn't ring me and ask me to go on it.
Well, you don't need to lose as much
weight. I'm 10 kilos overweight.
Yeah, but that's.
I had all those health checks.
Yeah, I know, but still. But basically, for me, I just heard Mimi, right?
You're not going to play that nose thing you used to play.
I just turned 50 and I thought, you know what? I need to do something. So I was in that frame of mind anyway.
Mm.
And then I was chatting to, obviously, the kids because it's a huge intrusion on everybody's life. And they said, go on, Mum, you'd be a great leader. So it's not so much about losing weight yourself. It's about leading a group and maybe following people and giving people, I suppose, not the inspiration because that sounds a bit cheesy, but giving them the will to follow you, to follow your meal plan, to do it right. So that role actually really appealed to me. So that's one of the reasons I did it. And people are talking to me and they're going, aren't you great, aren't you great? And I'm going, I just lost a few pounds that I needed to lose.
No, you are
I did
great.
Not win a medal in the Olympics. I did not win a PPI award,
yep.
Like somebody I know sitting across from me.
Yeah, well, I'm going to talk. I'm going to blow my own trumpet now in just a moment,
yeah, please
Brenda.
Do.
And everybody else's trumpet are going to be collectively blown. Speaking of which,
yes.
You never mentioned my...
Your outfit.
Thank you very much.
Look, we're on radio.
I know.
You're talking about people kind of thinking they're not on telly.
Yeah.
You're on radio. There's no need for that suit. You should have come in nice and casual.
Do you like it?
I love it. It's
Gurren
beautiful.
Is my favourite colour.
It is a beautiful colour. It's an expensive suit.
Coffee was
is
here.
It?
Well, I wouldn't say it's an expensive suit,
yeah.
But it's a suit.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to
Why?
Tell you
for
a story.
Me?
Because
mm-hmm.
When I went in to get it, I had seen it and I thought, I'm going in to get that suit. And I went in and when I marched over to where they sell the suits, there was a man and a woman. I thought, hope that woman doesn't serve me. First
what
thing that
mean?
Came to my head. I didn't want, I was going over to buy it and this probably is sexist, but I just didn't want her to be
my
taking
God,
my inside
he's turning
leg.
Into Donald Trump. Go
I
on.
I didn't want her taking my inside leg.
You mean what? You would get too excited?
Not at all. No. She mightn't give it back.
Yeah.
No, I just didn't fancy the idea of it. I mean, would you like a man coming along and telling you, you know, what underwear to buy and all that to advise you?
I would,
kind of
yeah.
Stuff? Yeah, you would not.
It depends.
But at the same time, I felt uncomfortable. And it's a bit like when you're getting your hair cut done as well. When you go to the barbers, if there's a female barber there or a male barber there, I prefer the man to cut my hair.
Look, you've hit on something, and it's really it's prevalent in the service industry. I mean, I know myself, if you go in to the hairdressers or whatever, and you're looking at the different people who are serving you, and you're going, I really want this lady here, but I'm looking at the way the rota is going, I could end up with the other lady.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do?
Well, what
are
do
you
do?
Rude and say, thanks very much, but I'm waiting for this person, and you're insulting the other person's skill level? Or do you think, well, actually, I'm just using the hair as an example, that this other person would do a much better job on my hair, and I'm going to be selfish and to hell with being rude to somebody. See, we're Irish, we don't like kind of, you know, it's a difficult one, but a very common one, a very common one.
Do you remember when the crash came?
Is it not over?
Well, when it came first back, many years ago, I changed my hairdressers because I didn't have to give as much of a tip to the new hairdresser. They didn't have the same expectations.
Right.
So with a new hairdresser came a saving in tips.
Right. And that's
why
that
was a good
changed.
Idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, and did they both give the same quality hairstyle?
I got a better haircut from the second person as an
Abby. Very careful.
Anyway,
riot.
Brenda's with us. So you're happy you did it?
I am. Do you know what? I'm genuinely delighted I did it. Of course, like everybody, you'd have reservations from it. But people have been amazing. Great public support. You'd great backup. Derek, with the experts there, with Carl Henry, Aoife on the food. She was really my saviour because she came down and sorted out the whole planning and everything. Everybody kind of got behind you. I didn't really hear anything negative. All I heard was, well done, keep it up. The only problem now is that the programme's over. Everybody's gone from, isn't it great, well done, to, now keep it off. Whatever you do now, don't go back.
Well, good
so
for
you
them.
Feel that
and good
pressure.
For you.
But,
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you very
well
much.
Well done. And can I say congratulations to a lot of our colleagues here at RTE, because the PPI Radio Awards took place last night in County Kilkenny. 38 awards in total, and RTE did very, very well indeed. I'll just name off some of the Dave Fanning. He was inducted, sucked into the PPI Hall of Fame. Good man, Dave Fanning. News programme, Morning Ireland, won a big dong, gong. The documentary on One, An Open Verdict, RT Radio 1, that got an award. Short feature, Who Took Mom to the Prom, RT Radio 1, congratulations. News reporter, Justine McCarthy on RT Radio, well done, Justine. Blonigny Coffee, Rajan the Gaeltachta, for Irish language programs, well done. Colm O'Regan, once a world sideline productions for RT Radio 1, he won one. Then whatever. Anyway, station imaging, RTE 2FM. And last, but by no means least, the Dawn Chorus, RT Radio 1, hooray!
Yay.
The bigger fanfare than that. Yeah, even bigger than that. I don't know.
Have you got
that? That sounds quite royal and regal and queenish. That'll do. Anyway, you can text 51551 if you want to say welcome back, if you want to say get off the air. But more importantly, if you want to take part in our quiz, and we have a fabulous prize, and it's a two-night stay at Castleknock Country Club, and it's an evening dinner on a night of your choice, and it's a general knowledge quiz. It's fairly straightforward. Just text now, 51551 with your name, and then hopefully Sinead will get back to you. All right, we're going to take a break. And after that, I'll be meeting Oliver Dunn, because there's been other rewards dished out this week, the Michelin Star Awards. And Oliver Dunn has got some very strong views on these matters.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
They do not adjust your set as they would have said in the old days. You're listening to The Mooney Show. We're back for a new season. Text 51551. We'll be here with you here every Saturday from 6 to 7 p.m. Every Saturday. We're going to be booted off in a few weeks for more sport. What's the world coming to? Can I just mention Angus McAnally? Christy Hennessy, the Platinum Collection, featuring Angus McAnally and band, is going on a nationwide tour October, November and December. And Angus will be in shortly, because I think his interpretation of Christy Hennessy's music, and actually his impersonation of Christy Hennessy, the man, is absolutely fantastic. So Angus will be in here very shortly. But I want to tell you about Heron and Grey. It's a restaurant, and it's situated by the market in the South County Dublin village of Blackrock. And despite the fact that they can only feed 24 people at a time and at a push, it hasn't stopped them securing one of the most coveted awards in the culinary business, otherwise known as the Oscars of the hospitality industry. They've got a Michelin star. Now, half of the winning team, Chef Damien Gray, gave RT Radio 1's Sean O'Rourke his reaction to the news during the week.
Before we got the star, we were already booked out till January. Our good fortune had turned just before we got the phone call, and Andy's sitting there right now going through about 500 emails. we'll make plans and see how we just let it just grow organically and see what happens.
Well, that brings the number of Michelin stars in the Republic, on the island of Ireland to 12. So that's 10 in the south and 2 in the north. Patrick Gibo in Dublin retained his 2-star status. But how many of us would recognise a Michelin star meal if it was put in front of us? Or how many of us have actually heard of it or have been to a Michelin star restaurant?
I went to a Michelin star restaurant in Ranelagh a number of years ago. It was an extremely good meal. It was memorable, but it certainly wasn't worth the money that I spent on it. It was too expensive.
I've been to a few. I'm a food writer, so it's not always where you'll get the best meal. It definitely comes out very artfully presented and beautiful and tastes really good, but sometimes I want a hamburger afterwards.
I was only in the one, Patrick Ebo's, and I have to say it's very delicious, but it's sinfully expensive. You see, if you're going to go the whole hog of all the starters and the wine, and it's a special treat, I suppose I probably would pay 150. For a normal night out with a meal and wine, you're going to pay 60 or 70 or 80 anyway.
The service is intimidating. Condescension tends to be omnipresent. And it's based, I think, on a model of dining, which is becoming increasingly antiquated.
I went to one only recently in Baggot Street. Pricey enough. The wines were dear. €12 a glass. You wouldn't do it too often, would you? But it's nice for a treat.
Nice for a treat, but is receiving a Michelin star always good news for the restaurant? Or can it be bad for business, like the culinary equivalent of the curse of hello? Oliver Dunn is a former bearer of the Michelin Medal of Honour. He's a chef and owner of Bon Appetit in Malahide, Cleaver East in Dublin's Clarence Hotel, and he's just opened a new restaurant, Beef and Lobster, in Dublin's Dame Street, and that's where I met him earlier this week.
The whole Michelin star thing for me, and I do believe, you know, across where a chef who's going out to win a Michelin star, it's for personal achievement, you know. I would have probably said it over the years, and, you know, chefs would say it, that, you know, Michelin star, but it's never, I didn't at one stage in my life, being really honest, want the Michelin star for the good of the business. I want the Michelin star for me. Nothing else. I want the Michelin star for me as a...
The culinary Olympics almost.
Yeah, a badge of honour, I suppose. A very hard thing to achieve, a wonderful thing, an amazing thing, and I have so much respect for anyone who ever achieves it, because you can't achieve it, and I really mean it, without putting thousands and thousands and thousands of
hours. Well, tell me, what do you do? How do you get it?
Well, you just cook, like, you know, in simple terms, you just cook really well consistently. That's it. You know, there's no special secret recipe for this. It's just 3 consistent courses. It's not necessary to have a certain style restaurant. It's not necessary to have a certain style of service. The price structure is irrelevant. Your decor is irrelevant. All that's relevant is 3 consistent courses.
Well, I go to Burdock's at least once a week up in Rathmines and have fish and chips, and they're totally consistent.
Well, if Burdock had a starter and a dessert, Burdock's could win a Michelin star. Maybe it has to be a restaurant as opposed to a takeaway, but if they had a sit-down area...
It is a sit-down area.
Well,
down in there, I have my dinner.
And if you rang Michelin Guide now and asked them the question, could Burdock's win a Michelin star if they serve a starter and dessert, they would tell you yes, once it's good enough, consistent enough.
And once there's a starter and dessert.
Once, 3 consistent courses. So amuse-bouche and petit fours and all these things are not necessary.
What was the first one you mentioned?
An amuse-bouche, like a pre-starter, a little snack, you know, to amuse the mouth, it's supposed to be.
Oh, I see, okay.
All these things are not necessary, but the nature of, I suppose, when you're striving for excellence, you're striving to deliver the best standard of food that you can deliver, it's only natural that then that transcends to the restaurant. So you try to have your restaurant looking as well as you think it can look, having the service as well as you feel it can be. So the whole things are intertwined. So I understand why it's confusing for the consumer, and the consumer thinks that all these things are relevant for Michelin stars, but there's from a Michelin star chef, and coming from someone who sat with Michelin star inspectors on numerous occasions and had chats with them and in-depth conversations, it's irrelevant.
Okay, so you started up your business. How long ago did you start?
Bon Appetit opened 11 years ago.
So at what stage did you contact Michelin star and say, come out and grade me? Or did somebody else do that?
No, you don't.
So how do they hear about you?
Word of mouth. So when the Michelin star inspector comes in and has a meal, and sometimes, not always, but sometimes they would ask to speak to the chef. You know, you'd never know at the end. After the meal, they would say, can we speak to the chef? They'd give a card to the reception desk. I'd come down and I'd say, how are you, Derek? How's it going? And they would have a chat, and you'd just be chatting about things and what's going on. And he'd say, what's happening in Dublin? And I'd say, oh, a new restaurant opened, you know, beef and lobster, and it's very, very good. And, you know, he'd be writing a note down, and, you know, he'd then go off and research. And there's a massive research team behind, you see. So, like, the 11 or 12 guys on the ground, guys and girls on the ground, who look after the British Isles, they're supported by a massive research team that look through all the newspapers, all the foodie columns, everything. They know what's happening. They don't just...
So they're reading about you, apart from just eating in your restaurant. Is that what you're saying? But what if you've been consistently getting bad reviews? Doesn't mean your food is bad or your restaurant is bad. It just means that reviewer may not even like you and end off.
They know, you know, there's a history to everything, you know, so... They're not going to give a Michelin star to somebody with no pedigree. So, no disrespect, if you open a restaurant tomorrow, no one ever heard of you in the culinary world. So, regardless of how well you cook your food in that first year, even if it has Michelin star, even if it's a Michelin 2-star standard, I don't believe you'd ever be given a Michelin star.
Right.
Because they'd want to see, well, where did this fella come from? What pedigree does he have? Where did he work before? Is this just a fluke? So, they'd give you a couple of years and they'd watch you to keep your eye on you. So, for me in Bon Appetit, I opened Mint Restaurant, was my first restaurant. And I had Michelin inspectors in Mint. I was there for 2 years.
I thought it was Dylan McGrath.
No, Mint was my restaurant.
But didn't Dylan McGrath have it?
Dylan McGrath took over after me.
Yeah, and then he got a Michelin star, didn't he?
So he got a Michelin star then the year after.
But you didn't get one then, there?
In Mint, no. So I was an unknown entity for the 2 years when I opened Mint. It was just I was 26 years of age. I was a head chef, but I had pedigree. So I'd worked in Michelin star restaurants for my whole life, basically.
Yeah. But when you were in Mint, were you trying to get the Michelin star? Was that a goal
of
yours?
Of course.
So were you raging when he came along and he got it?
No, I won it the exact same year. The exact same year. So it didn't matter. No, you paddle your own boat. You don't care. You paddle your own boat. You're very happy for anyone else to get it. Of course, you want to achieve it. So when I had Mint, I had the Michelin inspectors in looking at what I was doing. They spoke to me a couple of times. So when I opened Bon Appetit, I'm sure they said, this guy has worked in X. They knew my career has worked in X, Y, and Z. He's been serving great food Mint for the last 2 years. So when I opened Bon Appetit, I got a Michelin star my first year. But
fantastic.
It was, obviously, there was a bit of background history behind that.
So. All right, so what did it feel like when they awarded the Michelin star? Do they call you up and say, you're getting a Michelin star?
No.
Or is it announced through the press, or what way is it done?
The day the Michelin Guide came out, yes, in Bon Appetit, I felt I deserved one that year. You know, I'm in the kitchen every day. I know we were delivering. I know the standard we were delivering. So was I expecting it? Expecting the wrong choice of word, but put it this way. I knew it was coming out at 12 midday, the guide was, on whatever particular date it was in September. I know September now, it's a long time ago. I think it was like the 18th or 19th or something like that. So myself, my wife, and my now 11-year-old son, but at the time 1-year-old Evan, were sitting in the office in Bon Appetit waiting for the announcement to be made on the Michelin website at 12 o'clock. And all of a sudden I got a text from my auntie. And my auntie Rita, and she just texted, well done, congratulations. Now, my auntie Rita at that time wouldn't have really been au fait with the whole Michelin star world, but there was an announcement happened on the radio, so it leaked, so it has a history of leaking. And I wasn't really sure what she meant. And then I got a text then 2 minutes later from a friend of mine, Joe Gar, and Joe texts me, I can't say it on the radio, well done. So I picked up the phone and I rang him and I said, straight up, what are you talking about? You know, like, what's it? Because like two texts in a second, something was had to happen. And he goes, I heard on the radio you won a Michelin star. So it was amazing. I remember it was the first time in my life, and I think the only time I involuntarily screamed. No control. And I threw my phone with excitement. I didn't even realise I was throwing it. My phone hit the wall and smashed on the ground into pieces.
No way.
In the office, yeah. And it was absolute elation. Like, and people can never understand that, but you're putting, you know, 100-hour weeks in. There was 10 years build up to that. You know, I was through all the restaurants I worked since I got up when I was 28. From 18, you're working hard 80 hours, you know, or the rest from I moved to the UK for 5 years. You put a massive amount of work in it. So it was like as if I achieved where I wanted to be, the goal. The goal was always during my younger, from the age of 21, I always wanted to be a Michelin star chef.
And was it like that evening? You heard this at 12 noon or thereabouts.
Oh,
did you still feel the same
celebrated
way that evening?
Yeah, and it was brilliant, like, for a long time.
Because I remember Matt Damon saying one time after he won the Oscar, he won it very young, and you were young too, getting that Michelin star, the youngest person to get it. He said to himself when he got home after the party that night with the Oscar in his hand, I hope this is not what it's all about.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, as much as he got it too early.
That moment did happen, but it didn't happen straight away. It happened, I couldn't tell you, I can't put a finger... finger point on exactly when it happened. But yeah, probably a couple of years later, you know, for the first couple of years, I had the ideas of, right, now you got it. There was a bit of a come down. I remember after the first 6 months, my wife does tell me that, she reminds me, because it was like, she says, what is that all about? But then I sort of rejigged myself, right, so what are you going to do now? Because that was my goal.
Yeah,
that
so
was
my, you my, have it now.
My single goal. So
and
then I had
you've
no goal.
Keep it.
I had, well, keeping it was never something that ever fazed me, or I never come into my head or worried me or concerned me. It was that, you know, if you have a single drive to achieve something and then you achieve it, then you've no drive left. So I needed to refine the drive. So that was then, for a short period of time, right, let's get 2 Michelin stars. So that kept me going for a couple of years, that I wanted 2 Michelin stars. But really deep down, and going back when I was 21, when I decided I wanted to be a Michelin star chef, I never ever once said I wanted to be a 2 Michelin star chef. Mm. I only sort of said that to myself after I won the 1 star. But 1 was enough for me. And I suppose I got, when the older you get, the more mature you get, the more I become comfortable with myself, the more I realised that, you know. And then the more I realised how important it was that now I'd much prefer to have a successful business than to have a Michelin star. And the two sometimes, I would say more often than not, don't necessarily go well together because there's a conflict of interest.
So you never got the second one?
No,
Patrick
never got.
Gibo has two.
Patrick Gibo has two, yeah, and had it for, I don't know how long, a long, long, long time.
And it's funny you say it never really bothered you that you would lose it, because I know that Derry Clark in Lacrovan was concerned that he might lose his,
yeah,
and that he had plan B in yeah. place, that he was going to change the style of food and everything. That's what I read anyway,
yeah, yeah.
That this was his plan if he didn't get it, and that Kevin Thornton was said it was like getting a stab in the back,
yeah,
when he lost,
yeah,
his.
Yeah, apparently devastated. No, it was never a consideration for me. You know, it was like, it was what I had done. So at that stage, I was cooking professionally 10 years. And on the highest standard, I was in all the levels of Michelin star, up to 3 stars. So it was just normal work for me. I was going to work like you go to work every day. I was doing my job. There was never a fear the next day I was going to not do my job. Things were just done to that standard. And that's the way it was. It was black or white. So I never worried about it.
So was it good for business?
It's good for profile. It's good for media. So as a result of that, you get your name out there. And of course, you're attracting business. The actual fact is you can never actually figure out how beneficial it is, because no one comes in and says, by the way, I'm coming to your restaurant because it has a Michelin star. Mm. I was in Malahide. I feel if it was in city centre, it would have been much more beneficial than it was being in Malahide, because again, I'm pulling from a much smaller catchment area.
There's lots of money at Malahide.
But I had the same sentiment when I actually went out and opened Bon Appetit in Malahide. I thought there's lots of money in Malahide.
As I understand it, it's got the highest percentage of, in inverted commas,
yeah,
professional
that's true.
Classes.
That is a fact. It does have. But what percentage of them are interested in food? Just because, you know, you're successful in whatever walk of field you're in doesn't mess with any interest in
food. But
does it
mean you can keep your prices high? Were your prices high? Did you consider them high? Or could you hire them as a result of getting your Michelin star?
No, of course, the prices were high. And that's where it's it becomes a double-edged sword, I think, the whole Michelin world. We were an expensive restaurant, yeah? And I opened in 2006. So 2007.
Not a great time, yeah.
2007, January 2007, we won the Michelin star. We all know what happened next. So the world changed an awful lot. And as a result of the recession coming, for me personally, it was a great thing, because I had no choice but to adapt. I had no choice but to change. When I opened Bon Appetit, we used to have 9 chefs in the brasserie. We used to have 5 chefs in the restaurant upstairs. And then we have a tapas bar on the ground. That's what we used to have. Move forward 3 or 4 years later, I had 6 chefs in the entire building. And the food was of the same standard. I just cut out all the nonsense that I was doing.
So what nonsense did you cut out?
Little things that you do on a daily basis. Like you could spend an hour in the kitchen making sure your tomatoes are 100% square. You know, and I mean literally 100% square. After 2 or 3 meals out, you'd be discarding them and using them into something else. You'd be cutting chips. I remember in the brasserie, we just had like a ribeye steak with chips in the brasserie. Simple. But these chips were 9 perfect rectangles. Everyone symmetrical, everyone the exact same size. Do you think a customer ever came into the restaurant and thought, Jesus, I'd love my chips to be the same size? No one cared.
How many people came to you on the basis that you had a Michelin star, or did you ever find that out?
No idea.
Because I'm very much aware of the fact
tourists,
that you had one,
yeah.
But I wouldn't be a foodie.
No, we would have a couple of food tourists, as in people would come in and say, oh, we've come out because of the Michelin star. You know, but that was few and far between.
But it wouldn't keep you alive.
No, most of our business was local. It was all the residents of Malahide, okay. North County Dublin. And over the years, it proved that like Friday night and Saturday night were our only 2 busy nights. And then when you're a Michelin star restaurant, you become a special occasion restaurant. You know, how often do you go to a Michelin star restaurant on a whim? If you say, let's go out on a Tuesday night, where do we go tonight? Oh, let's go to Bon Appetit. You know, and the reality was at the time, let's go to Bon Appetit and spend maybe €150. So
and those days are gone.
Yeah,
you want to keep it.
The world's changed, and I think it's not necessarily the strong and the fast who survive; it's the ones who have the ability to adapt.
Yeah.
So Cleaver East opened. That gave me the confidence to realise that okay, it's not. And just to give a little bit of background, what was the final decision maker for me was that the food in Bon Appetit was better than Cleaver East. The service in Bon Appetit was better than Cleaver East. The style of the restaurant was subjective, okay, but I personally thought it was nicer than Cleaver East. All the customers left Cleaver East happier. And that's what gave me the confidence to make the decision, which was I'm going to combine the restaurant on the first floor of Bon Appetit with the brasserie on the basement of Bon Appetit. And the brasserie in Bon Appetit had a thing called a bibe gourmand, which is the half Michelin star, if you want to call it, which is always overlooked, but it was, I think, the only restaurant in the British Isles, if not the world, has ever maintained both at the same time. So we combined both of them together and we just have just the one restaurant, Bon Appetit. And that's what we did. And we just hoped we would retain all them upstairs customers and they'd all shift and sit downstairs as opposed to upstairs. So we upped the standard of the brasserie and I suppose effectively closed the restaurant.
Yeah, but do they still judge you? Do they still come out and have a look and see if you deserve a Michelin star? Or have you told them, look, don't do it, please. No disrespect. I enjoyed it when I have it, but I don't need it now. And if they were to say to you tomorrow, well, listen, you're doing fantastic. We're going to give you a Michelin star again. Would you accept it?
That would never happen because we now don't cook at Michelin star standard. We don't. And the day we decided to close the restaurant, we don't cook at Michelin star standard anymore.
So you ruled yourself out of the race without telling anybody, in effect?
Yes, like the day we closed the two restaurants together, the food served in Bon Appetit didn't deserve a Michelin star. But
you just still have your menu, you still have your starter, your main.
Well, we just changed. We changed the restaurant from doing 40 to 50 covers a night to a restaurant doing 150 covers.
I know,
a night.
I know, but you're still doing your starter, your main, and your dessert, as you said, that of Burdocks and Rathmines.
But the three of them would have to be at a good enough standard consistently to win a Michelin star.
Have you ever gone to a Michelin star restaurant and said, didn't deserve it?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Have you ever sent food back?
No, I'd never sent food back. Why? Just being a professional, I understand the effort and work that goes into it. And
but sometimes they get the order wrong.
Like, if the food came out as in completely wrong, as in, like, if my order was wrong, if I ordered the sea bass and I got a chicken, of course I'd send that back, you know what I mean?
But no,
I mean,
no, but sometimes you order cooked a medium bit, well steak.
No, I'd eat it.
And it comes back raw, you'd eat it.
Raw, no. But if there was...
Or medium to rare, and you haven't ordered that,
you'd
be okay with
yeah.
that.
As a matter of fact, when I go to a restaurant, if I want a steak, medium rare is how I prefer it, I just say ask for a medium. And if they get a medium rare, I'm happy. If it goes medium well, I'm happy.
They say we don't complain in Ireland about food. When we're in restaurants, we don't send it back. And we need
I wish they'd stop coming here. Yeah, there is that.
Are we afraid to send it back because we have all these notions about what the chef might do to it?
Yeah, I think that's.
Doesn't that happen?
I think that's an old phrase, isn't it? I don't think that anyone really believes that anymore. I've never seen.
Did you ever do it?
Never.
When somebody sent back food, did they ever send it back to you?
Of course.
And you got annoyed.
I've got food sent back.
How dare they?
I've got food sent back loads of times in my career. I've never seen any chef in any restaurant I've ever worked in do anything disrespectful or wrong to food. I don't think it happens. Like, I don't think it's ever happened. I think it's just one of them things. It doesn't exist.
Don't know about that. It doesn't exist. All right. Doesn't exist. But do you send food back, Brenda?
Oh, very rarely. Unless if it's something.
Why?
If it's undercooked.
Why would you not send it back?
I just don't do it, I suppose. Well, sure, look, I'll eat anything if it's on a plate.
But would you be afraid that they might interfere with it backstage, so to speak?
It might cross your mind, but not really.
Oh, okay.
It's not
fair
a
enough.
Big issue. Like, basically, if a steak is undercooked, you want it kind of medium to well done, you see blood, you say no thanks.
No thanks. Right.
That's it. That's it. And whatever you do to it inside, it doesn't bother me.
Would the mother send food back?
But never.
Never, really?
Never. That'd be terrible.
Do you ever send
rude.
The mother's food back? The mother-in-law's food. Do you ever send
never.
It back?
Never. Jeannie, never. Never. The mother-in-law, never.
I remember years ago, a colleague of ours here in the radio centre invited me over for dinner in their new home.
Who?
And I was sitting down and they had the most beautiful minestrone soup at the beginning,
lovely.
Which was delicious. And then presented fish on a plate.
Yeah.
And I don't eat fish.
So what you do?
Oh, well, I didn't really want to say much. Angus, there you are!
Do you remember?
He was, yeah. Do you remember that?
I do indeed. The fish was lovely. I ate it myself.
Yeah. It's a very hard thing to do when you go to somebody's house and there's food you don't eat. I don't eat fish unless it's been battered by Burdocks. I'm no interest in it.
We love fish. I eat fish all the time. I love, salmon and haddock, plaice, anything at all. I love it. Absolutely
expensive taste you got from the parents, no doubt.
Fish fish is very cheap. You can get really cheap cuts. It's gorgeous. It's so good for you. I love it. I love it.
And we know it's good for you.
Get a side of a salmon for a tenner and you get five or six goals off it.
You have to cook it.
You have to cook it. You have to do things. But Angus, it's great to see you. Who are you with?
Ivan McKenna is here with me, my musical director. And Ivan, good to see you again as well. And we're about to head on tour. One of the things I've wanted to do for the last couple of years has been to take the music of Christy Hennessy, who was a great friend, a man that I knew and loved dearly, and became a great friend with the family, so much so that they asked me to speak on their behalf at his funeral in Tralee, which was very, very moving. And I have a new show that I'm taking on tour all over the country, starting on the 20th of October in Waterford. I'm going to the Everyman in Cork on the 21st, right through until the 3rd of December, and a big show in the Concert Hall on the 27th of November. And Hermione, his daughter, is coming over to join us, and also Francis Black will be singing as well. And just doing 22 of his songs, including this one, which I suppose is the one that everybody loves, of Christy.
That's my favourite too. And can I just say, those details are on our website, rte.ie/Mooney. So for this one, for our listeners and for Christy, in memory of Christy, Angus and Ivan.
Sitting here so long for you to hear my song, but all you want to know, have I been on the radio? Who's the biggest star I've seen? What is my favorite scene? And if I get the job, would I sing on my Yes, sir, I would sing on Mars. I'd play upon a star. I'd sing songs of the sun. And when my job was done, I would say I love you so, and I'd like to play one more. Just to all young lovers, for the road. Just how far I need to go to be a star. I have known my highs and lows. I've worked in every show. I've played in every town and broke some houses down. I've walked upon an empty stage, one light in my face, to be told don't phone us, but we'll phone you. Every day the same old scenes, the same old happenings. 100 miles of shows, and yet no place to go. And when my luck is all run out, you're asked to take a bow. You've just stolen the show, but now you're on your own. Yes, sir, I would sing on Mars. My dream scene is me a star, me the star. I am a star.
Good man, Christy, we love you.
Absolutely amazing. I think I'm going to cry. That was beautiful. That was really,
it's
really
a great song. It
my
really
favourite
is.
Christy Hennessy song, beautifully sung, full of emotion, says Ed, who's listening in.
Oh, thank
and
you,
listen
Ed.
To this. 1, 2, 3. There's about 20 pages here. I asked the listeners to text in to say, welcome back, Derek. And there's one response. All those 20 thrills you're back, Derek. We'll really look forward to my Saturday evening radio now.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's Saturday. It's the Mooney Show. Time to play Mooney's Saturday Night Quiz.
Yes, one of our favourite moments in the entire programme of last season was the Mooney Show quiz, and I'm told that literally tons of you texted in to take part today. No, that bit is actually true. So we have three people chosen. Sinead has gone through everybody. And our first player is Rebecca Monaghan, and you're from Ennis in County Clare. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Derek. How are
so
you?
How are you called Monaghan and you're from Ennis in County Clare? How did that happen?
I'm Monaghan without the G.
Oh, it's missing the G, is it?
Yeah,
so tell me a little bit about yourself, please.
I'm married to Ray. I have two boys, Killian, who's 9, and Josh is 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I run a family business in Ennis, County Clare, a ladies' fashion boutique called Mon's Eye.
Called what?
A ladies' boutique called Mon's Eye.
Mon's Eye?
Yeah,
like bonsai.
Yeah.
Only it doesn't have the G. No.
It's, no, but it doesn't have the G.
And what does Mon's Eye mean, or does it mean anything?
We just made it up from the names, Monaghan, Mon, and my mother's name is Siegfried, so the S and the two boys, the A and the I from Joshua and Killian.
Your mother's name is Siegfried?
Yeah, she's German.
Is
yeah.
she?
Yeah. So she helps me in the shop. We do a half day each, and we have all European labels and manufactured in Europe and one-of-a-kind pieces. So, yeah, it's working well.
But do you have any Dainty in Erin?
Any which?
Any of it made in Ireland?
No, not at the moment, but looking into it.
Now, Brenda, you get down there and see if you can bring in a few Irish designers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're just open a year and a half, so...
Oh, well, and how's business? Is it good?
Sorry?
Is it good?
It is good, yes. Yeah, it's working well. And Ennis is thriving at the moment, so... Upwards and onwards.
As they say. Well, listen, let me tell you what you're playing for. We've got a cracker of a prize for this week's winner. We've teamed up with Castleknock Hotel and Country Club. The award-winning four-star hotel is set in a beautiful countryside setting right on the doorstep of Dublin City. It boasts an 18-hole golf course, a deluxe day spa, a well-equipped leisure centre and award-winning restaurants. All under one roof and within easy reach of everything that Dublin has to offer. So the lucky winner will enjoy 2 nights for 2 people, including breakfast each morning and an evening meal for 2 in the award-winning Park Restaurant and the full use of the hotel's leisure facilities. So that's what you're playing for. Are you good at quizzes?
I try. It's a lovely prize, so we'll give it a shot.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck indeed. You've 60 seconds to answer as many questions as you can correctly. If you don't know the answer, simply say pass. Brenda is the scrutineer. Are you ready? Your time starts now. Which emperor hung the Mona Lisa in his bathroom?
Pass.
Who wrote Dancing at Lunasa?
Real.
Have a listen to this song and name its well-known French composer.
Pat.
In New Zealand, is New Zealand southeast or southwest of Australia?
West, southwest.
In what year was the Battle of Clontarf?
1066.
Who was the Greek god of love?
Venus.
Following its run in London's West End, The Commitments opens in Dublin's Bord Gáis Energy Theatre on Wednesday. Can you name this song from the original soundtrack? In maths, if x minus 7 is 8, what is x?
15.
What is paleontology?
It's about stones or bones.
Who was the president of the United States prior to George W. Bush?
Reagan.
What is the number at the top of the dice?
The number at the top of the dice.
What number is at the top of the dice
one.
If 4 is at the bottom?
2.
All right. Sorry, I misled you there a little bit. My apologies for that. Yes, I can ask you one more question to make up for my foolishness. In what country is the town of Skibbereen? In which county, excuse me?
Cork.
All right. Well done to you.
Thank you.
As we say, don't hang up and we'll be back to you in just a moment. Let's move on to player number 2. And player number 2 is Sean Nash from Derry. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Derek. How's it going?
Very nice to talk to you. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm 44 years old, live in Derry. Work in nuclear management for 16 years since I graduated from university. Big Liverpool fan. Hope they see them in the league this year, like every year. The eternal optimist, obviously. That's really it.
All right.
I've got two lovely kids. I've got Chloe's 10 and Connor's 4.
Are you ready? 60
yes,
seconds
I am
on the
be.
Clock for you starts
Go
now.
For it.
What is the national symbol of Scotland?
The thistle.
What did C.J. Haughey, when did C.J. Haughey first become Taoiseach? Was it 75, 79 or 81?
79.
Can you name this Jean-Michel Jarre hit from the 1970s?
I know, but I cannot pass.
What name is given to the distance which a beam of light travels in a year?
Light speed.
What is the capital of the equator?
Greenwich.
What ball is worth the most points in a game of snooker?
Black.
Can you name this song from the soundtrack of the movie The Commitments? You
know Try a Little Tenderness.
Who wrote the famous novel Black Beauty?
Pass.
Is Michael D. Higgins the 8th, 9th or 10th president of Ireland?
9th.
Which way do stalactites grow, up or down?
Down.
What part of you is affected if you suffer from cardiovascular disease?
Heart.
The British Prime Minister lives at number 10 Downing Street. Who lives at number 11?
The Chancellor Exchequer.
Well done to you. You did very well indeed. Let's scoot along to number three. Player number three this evening is Helen Gallagher from Rathgar in Dublin. Hello, Helen.
Hi, Derek. How are you?
We're going to fire straight into it. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
60 seconds on the clock starting from now. What is the name of the strange kind of pictorial writing used by ancient Egyptians?
Chirographics.
Is most of a jumbo jet's fuel stored in the tail, the wings or the bulkhead?
The wings.
With which British pop act does Jean-Michel Jarre collaborate on this song?
Pass.
How many legs has a spider?
8.
Who wrote the novels Pride and Prejudice, Emma and Persuasion? In which country is the Taj Mahal?
India.
Can you name this song from the soundtrack of the movie The Commitments?
Try a Little Tenderness.
Springfield is the home of which TV family?
The Simpsons.
What letter represents 50 in Roman numerals? Take a guess.
L.
What is the female fox called?
A female what?
Fox.
A vixen.
What Irish county is known as the Premier County?
The Premier County.
Take a guess now.
Can I give her a clue?
Tipperary.
Tipperary. Well done to you. We'll be back after this break.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
Hey, you can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Do we have a winner, Brenda?
Yes, we do have a winner to the 4-star Castleknock Hotel and Country Club. It is Helen Gallagher. Helen, enjoy.
Hey.
How many did she get right?
She got 9 out of 11. I believe you're going out for a first drink since your baby was born. Enjoy, Helen.
Thanks very much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you to Angus and Ivan, and you can catch Christy Hennessy, the Platinum Collection. It goes on tour featuring Angus McAnally and his band. It's a nationwide tour, October, November and December, all around the country. And his big gig is at the National Concert Hall on the 27th of November. Details on our website, rte.ie. That's all we have. Thanks to Brenda.
Pleasure.
Thanks to our producer, Anna Leddy, on sound, Pat O'Carney, and our broadcast coordinator, is Sinead Renshaw. Our researcher is John Riley. We do it all again next Saturday at the same time. See you then. Bye-bye. Bye.
Follow us on Twitter at RTE Mooney.